Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon. It's a privilege and an honor to be here with you. I hope you are doing great. It's been a week or two since we've been on the show, so hope that the time has been meaningful and productive. We are 3 weeks from Rosh Hashanah last night. It's here. It's coming. It's something to look forward to. The anticipation is of equal value, if not in some ways more value, than the actual event that's coming. And we're coming to a big moment. We're coming to a big moment, and that is to reaffirm and reconnect our relationship to Hashem, our relationship to our soul, our relationship to our purpose. It's the yearly plug-in to who we are, why we are, where we're going. Time to take stock, right? Time to look at our year and sit there saying, where are we? And it's interesting, I've mentioned it before, but in the Northern Hemisphere, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the school year, the beginning of the work year, right? People go on holiday July, August, June, July, August, and September is when they start getting into the new zone. And Rosh Hashanah has a sense of beginning. And over here, Rosh Hashanah, in the Southern Hemisphere, Rosh Hashanah comes at the end of the year, just before the final school term, and like the year kind of takes off school, work-wise, everything, the new year's January. And it has a very different energy, but I think there's also something interesting about that energy, and that is that it's a sense of closure. In other words, it's a time of reflection. While there is a sense of beginning, because it's the beginning of the Hebrew year, I think that in terms of the calendar and how it's set up and the space of how our year, the methodology of the year, I think it's a time of reflection. It's a time to start winding down and reflecting and processing. And a productive Rosh Hashanah is obviously a Rosh Hashanah in which we have resolutions, in which we have transformation, in which we have commitment, in which we have growth. But that all happens through reflection. The month of Elul is a time of doing, but it's a time of reflection. Where am I? Cheshbon HaNefesh, literally taking a chart and making some sense of where am I? What have I progressed in my life? Which part of my life is healthier, more wholesome, and on better footing than it was a year ago? And which part of my life is static, exactly where I was a year ago? Not much has changed. Very forgettable in that way. And which part of my life have I downgraded? Am I less than? Not I as in the person, but my standard, my choices. Where have I grown? Where have I plateaued? And where have I gone down? And hopefully there's very little going down and there's very little plateauing. There's a lot of growth, but we're human beings. And sometimes just by sheer forgetfulness or by circumstances change, we can have parts of our life that are not going anywhere or heaven forbid, are sliding back. And now's the time of the year to look into this saying, wow, a year later, is my relationship healthier? Am I a more generous person than I was a year ago? Do I pray with more heart? Do I study? Am I kinder? Am I more forgiving? Am I more open? Am I more gracious? Am I more passionate? Am I more positive? Etc. And different people have different ways of doing it. Some people will just do it with a chart, and some people will do it in their mind. Some people will do it intuitively. But it's definitely a time to reflect and sit there saying, where have we gone? As individuals, as families, as communities, as organizations. To ask ourselves, where are things? And one of the ways we do it, which is a topic that is brought up every year and continuously needs to be brought up, is by choosing to mend relationships that are important to us. Some relationships that fall apart don't need mending. They just need a dignified goodbye, right? A friendship that no longer serves both parties doesn't need mending, unless there was hurt, but just needs a graceful goodbye. But then there are relationships that need mending, or even relationships that will never be mended, but need forgiveness so that each party can move on. Right? A dirty divorce that can at least hopefully stop being as dirty, as difficult, as painful, can be done with more dignity and let the parties go on their own way. But this is the time of fixing our relationships, right? We know that on Yom Kippur, which is in just over 4 weeks' time, the Talmud tells us that God forgives the sins that we did against him, right? A large part of Yiddishkeit, a large part of Judaism, is the commandments of us to our Maker. But there's the part that he does not forgive, and that's the part between us and our fellow human being. Our fellow human being, that God holds us accountable and expects us to sort out ourselves. Hashem can't fix the mess I made with my brother. And he can't fix my dishonesty, my gossip, my hurtful words, my neglect. The stuff that I mess up between my fellow human being, God stands back and says, you fix that. You clean that. I can't forgive on behalf of somebody else the hurt that you did for them. You have to fix it. And that's why the Jewish law, the Shulchan Aruch, tells us that this time of the year is about bringing healing and forgiveness to relationships as much as possible. And often we think of that in, you know, a very wide circle, right? Some person in the wider community who's upset with me, and maybe that has value. It definitely does. But at the core, I think it starts with the people closest to us. Our family, our loved ones, our dear friends, our parents, our children, our siblings, our spouse, our cousins, our co-workers, our employer, our employees, the people who have a deep, consistent relationship with us, where we're called upon to heal, to forgive, to ask forgiveness, to bring closure into these relationships this time of the year. We don't have a choice. What I mean, we don't have a choice. We often see forgiveness as a personal decision. It's not just a personal decision, it's a moral decision. It's not like, should I eat a green apple or a red apple, which fundamentally has a very little consequence to the world. These are moral decisions. Me holding back my forgiveness has huge consequences to the world, to my relationship, to me, to the person. And me offering my forgiveness equally has, on the other side, on the positive side, incredible significance and impact. It's not just me and my feelings. You know, today's day and age, we've made feelings the gospel, the God. You have to be true to your feelings. You have to be authentic to your feelings. And obviously, feelings are important. We're human. We're not robots. But my feelings are not my guide. My feelings are not my moral compass. My feelings might say never forgive that person, but my moral compass might say, but it's right. But it's right. And this time of the year is coming and reminding us a simple thing. It's the right thing to do, to bring healing to our relationships. And that's why I present to you a song that came out a few months ago. It says it as clear as I can, 10 times better. It's called Unity by Mordechai Shapiro on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
We've all sat through a funeral and listened to a eulogy so glowing it could have grilled cheese. An honest man, a loving husband, a devoted father, always smiling, never uttered a harsh word in his life. And somewhere in the back row, someone leans over and whispers, "Are we sure they've got the right guy?" We've all been there, sitting in those rows, hearing tributes to a person whose imperfections we knew intimately, the same person who had a temper, who held grudges, who once threw a chair during a game of poker on Yom Kippur. And yet somehow in death, they've undergone a strange sort of spiritual dry cleaning. The anger, the passive-aggressive WhatsApps, the stubbornness, all gone. And what remains is our beloved patriarch, a man of wisdom, an angel in disguise. So what's going on? Do people transform into saints the moment they stop breathing? Not quite, but we do. We change. Our vision softens. Our hearts open. And suddenly, the little things, the missed calls, the sharp comments, the petty disputes feel embarrassingly small. In the face of finality, perspective arrives, uninvited, but very welcome. We do remember the sacrifices, the long drives, the inside jokes, the efforts we were too distracted to notice. The life we once reduced to frustrations is revealed in full color. Not perfect, but rich, complicated, and deeply human. And we realize painfully that we were focused on the potholes and we missed the beauty of the road. There's a cultural reflex to canonize the dead. Grudges disappear, flaws evaporate, and suddenly they're remembered not as they were, but as they wish, as we wish they had been, or perhaps as we finally see them, free from our resentment. They can't hurt us ever again. But that raises an uncomfortable question. Why do we wait? Why must beloved father, brother, husband be carved into stone only once they are under it? Why do we find the words only once there's no one left to hear? And the answer, if we're honest, is that it's easier. The dead can't argue with us. They can't disappoint us ever again. There's no risk, no awkwardness, no vulnerability. Death gives us safe distance. We're protected from the uncomfortable feelings they used to stir in us, the ways they mirrored our insecurities, pressed our buttons, or forced us to confront ourselves. But by the time they're gone, what's the point? It's so late. We're speaking about forgiveness today. What if we flipped the script? What if we didn't wait until the slideshow and the food had been served? What if we forgave the living while they and us could still grow from it? What if we shared love while it could still be felt, not just mourned? What if we developed a strong enough sense of self that we no longer felt threatened by them? those who can hurt us means that we have still not developed the full resilience and armor. Obviously, I'm not talking about physical abuse. I'm talking about getting hurt from those we love and ending up in the same patterns over and over again. And instead of cutting them out of our lives, what if we could accept their love without being unsettled by the mirror they held up? Or better yet, embrace the mirror and the interchange it demands. Any person that triggers us, it's because in some way they are putting a mirror up to some deep feeling that we're struggling with. There is something profoundly sacred about saying you matter to me while the person is still on the other end of the phone and alive. About saying I forgive you when there's still time to heal, not just to grieve. About saying I love you when the words still crack in your throat, not after they faded into marble silence. We all get it. Forgiveness is hard. Not because we're bad people, most of us are not bad people, but because we're human. And humans, many of us, are not great at letting go of hurt. We cling to the pain like it's a security blanket. We say things like, I'll forgive, but I won't forget, which usually means I'll say the words while quietly maintaining a detailed emotional spreadsheet for future use. And the worst, I believe, is where we actually convince ourselves that holding a grudge in the local vernacular of horrible is the moral high ground. I find that when people say I'm horrible, they don't say it like in a defensive, you know, I'm sorry, I'm so petty and I'm horrible. No, they say horrible with like a sense of pride, like it's some moral high ground, like it's, if I'm horrible, then I must be right, because what do you mean? I would never have a horrible if I was wrong. That for me is the worst thing about the word. It seems to imply moral justification for the pain we now feel entitled to throw back at the person who dared cause them. Whatever we do to them now is 100% kosher because they caused it. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Forgiveness isn't just for them. It's for us. It's the heart's most effective diet plan. It lightens the emotional load. It unclogs the arteries of love. It frees us from bitterness that only corrodes from within. Let's be honest, we all know this. When we hold grudges, we hurt ourselves more than the other person. The famous analogy is it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to get a stomachache. But worst of all, it's morally wrong. Literally, the Torah teaches in the Chumash, Lo'sisna esachicha b'levavecha, do not hold a grudge against your brother. It is a prohibition to hold grudges. We have to work through our stuff. The goal is to clean out the stuff. Doesn't mean we have to become besties with people that hurt us. But we can't sit and wallow in that anger and that hurt. Either confront it, let it go. Those are the options. And while we're hurting ourselves with our resentments, our kids are watching. They see the silent treatment we give our sister, you give your sister, their aunt. They notice how cousin invitations are not sent out. They hear the, we just aren't close, shrug. Children absorb our values not through lectures, but through example. We all know this. And when we model cutoffs and cold wars, we teach them that it's okay for family to work like this. That is estrangement from family is normal. And one day, heartbreakingly, our children may turn that very lesson on us. or each other. A minor slight becomes a major silence. A disagreement can become a dynasty of distance. And often all that's left is a funeral and a eulogy full of what-ifs. If we're waiting for the perfect moment to forgive, it may come at a funeral when it's too late to reconcile, too late to text, too late to say, I'm sorry, I was so stubborn. I miss you. Let's talk. Making peace with gravestones is not enough. We need to make peace with people while they are here, while we are here. We are all flawed, complicated, damaged, very much human. All of us. Every party. Somehow, often when people die, we suddenly find all the compassion, the grace, the understanding, and suddenly we become aware of their pain. We see their humanity. We realize all they ever wanted was, just like every human being, to be seen, accepted, loved. Hurt people, hurt people. If they were happy and healthy, they would never do it. Doesn't mean we have to accept it from them, but it means we could develop compassion. Jewish mysticism talks about that the best way towards forgiveness and love is through compassion, where you understand where they come from. You understand why they're acting the way they're acting, and you don't have to justify it. It's not saying it's okay, but you develop compassion for their position in life, how their ideas of life were formed, what circumstances led them to do this. And that compassion can evoke love. We are capable of forgiveness. But say it now. Not just the words, but the love behind them. You could say, you hurt me, and I want to understand why. We've wasted too much time. Let's talk. I forgive you. Or please forgive me. No one's saying it's easy. I'm definitely not saying it's easy. I struggle with it, just like any one of us. It takes incredible courage. It takes humility. Sometimes it will take some therapy or an entire chocolate cake topped with ice cream and strawberries and jelly dots. But the freedom that follows, it's unbelievable. It's peace. Shalom. The word shalom, peace, is the same word as shalem, complete. When you figure out how to have peace in your life, peace with yourself, and peace with your loved ones, there's a certain completion that you have. There's no unfinished business. There's dignity and holiness when we can forgive. When we forgive, we pass down a role model through to our children that will help them one day make similar choices when they face the crossroads of relationships in their own lives. If foibles with family is not an option, then you're almost certain that your kids will not have foibles. There's no foolproof system. But if you raise them in a culture that there is no way to not solve stuff, figure it out. But if you couldn't solve your stuff, even if it's totally justified, we're teaching our children that somehow it's okay. Life is too short and love is too sacred to save our best words for the obituary. Say it now. Say it now. And I've had this show, for 11 years, for bringing show on Chayka. And I believe every year I speak about forgiveness. It's a journey I'm on every day of my life. And I definitely think it's extremely important. And what's incredible to me is how almost every year I've had someone approach me and say, Rabbi, after hearing the show on forgiveness, I called my dad, I called my mom, I called my brother, and we made peace. And the reason I come back every show, every year, and obviously it's not the same words, but the same theme, I come back is because I truly believe that hopefully one person hearing the show today will actually realize that I'm sick and tired of grudges. I don't want to hate my brother so much. I don't want to hate my sister. I don't want to hate my parent or my child or my cousin or my brother-in-law. Don't want to. It's sick. I don't want to be so preoccupied with hate. I don't like the person it brings out in me. And then you might have the courage to actually pick up the call, pick up the phone, and call the person and say, can we talk? Let's go out for coffee. Let's sit down together. This week, this time of the year, we say chapter 27 of Tehillim, of Psalms, twice a day. And one of the words we say, one of the verses we say is, Achashalti, one thing I ask of you, God, Shifti Bevet Hashem, I want to sit in the house of God and see God's light and radiance and visit His sanctuary. If you want to visit God in His house, we have to clean our own house. Our own house is our heart. Clean it of pain. Clean it of grudges. The song that just came out last week, absolutely love it. It's Achas by Yaakov Rosenblum on Just Those Words on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. And today we're talking about forgiveness, right? We're just before Rosh Hashanah, we're just before Yom Kippur, and it's a time of the year to clean our hearts. I can ask Hashem to forgive us and to understand that we made mistakes, but we're human. Humans are fallible. I'm going to ask Hashem to give us the grace. And the question is, can we give that grace over to others? And just see them as humans. You know, on the most part, all of us are just trying to figure out this thing called life. Thank God, I have a few children. I look at these kids, they're born and they're so innocent. And within a few years, they have to figure out so much about this world. And some people are more savvy and they figure things out quicker. Some people are brighter. Some people have a strong EQ. Some people are street smart. Some people are academically smart. Some people are sporty. And what that means is that we naturally will be better in certain areas of life. Someone who has a very athletic body will naturally be a much better athlete than someone who was born with a very unathletic body. Doesn't mean the unathletic body can't do sport, but they'll never master it the way, right? Some people have a natural brain for subjects, etc., and they could become a master, and the other person cannot. I don't know why that's not obvious, but sometimes when people say they're saying, no, you can be anything you want to be, no, you can't. If you have certain skills and you have certain passions, then you could be a lot, but you could definitely not be anything you want to be. If you don't have a head for chess, you will never become the grandmaster of chess. You won't. You'll be a decent chess player, maybe. If you don't have a decent voice, you're never going to become the next incredible singer of the universe. You just can't. You can't be anything you want to be. That's the biggest lie ever. We're all humans. We're all trying to figure this thing out, life. And developing compassion for ourselves and for others basically means to realize that, yeah, not everyone figures it out. Some people who maybe went through a lot of pain in life or people who don't have a natural EQ, they'll do things that can be hurtful. And often the people that do hurtful things, it's not because they're bad. They're just tactless. Maybe no healthy boundaries. Maybe they never were taught a vocabulary of dignity and love, and they don't even know how to express it. And compassion comes and says, yes, I know what you're doing is wrong. Obviously it's wrong. That's why I'm so hurt. But I don't hate you for it. I don't despise you for it. I see your strengths. I see your goodness. And I have compassion for your pain. I have compassion that you behave that way. And when we could turn our anger, our resentment to compassion, which is just a switch in the brain. It's not an easy switch, but it's a switch. What I mean, it's a switch. It's just a perspective. Instead of looking at the person and saying, you are such a hurting person. You hurt me so much. I come and sit there saying, wow, what made you be that? Chapter 32 in Tanya talks about Rachmanas mevatelas es asin al mayreres es ahava, that compassion removes the hatred and awakens the love. When I see you as an imperfect human trying. When I see myself, right, I can be much more forgiving to myself for the mistakes I've made and continuously make when I realize I was never asked to be perfect. It's a lie that we tell each other that you could become perfect. None of us become perfect. None of us die perfect. And when we look at children and say, oh, you're just perfect, nobody's perfect. That word, only God's perfect. But we could do better. We could grow more. But we can be understanding and compassionate about our imperfections. We're not all going to master everything. Our job is just to grow more than what we started. Each year to look at ourselves and say, have I grown? Am I a better version of myself, right? Unlike a car, that every year there's a new model. And for some people who can never drive a car older than 2 years, they're always getting the new model. There is no new model of me. I'm here. But from within, I can create a new version of myself. In other words, it's the same body, it's the same brain, it's the same heart, but I can reinvent myself, right? A car can't reinvent itself. It's the car. If you want a new one, get another one. But a human being can reinvent itself. Not discover a new person. It's the same me, but I'm a better version of myself. A year ago, I was resentful. Maybe now I'm not. A year ago, maybe I wasn't so studious, and this year I'm studying more. A year ago, I wasn't as disciplined, and this year I am. A year ago, I didn't take agency on my life, and this year I took more agency and ownership on myself, responsibility. We can reinvent ourselves. Not only we can, we must. Every year to look at the mirror and say, am I a better version? Am I still driving in my heart? I'm not saying literally a car, but am I still sitting in a car? Am I still a 2019 version where basically I am the exact same person I was in 2019 or 2005? Or am I a 225 model? I am not the person I was 2024. Am I a 2025 model of myself? Tav Shin Pei Hei going into Tav Shin Pei Vav 5785 going into 5786. What version of myself am I? If someone bumped into me and they haven't seen me in 5 years, would they see my growth? Do I see my growth? Or is it just deja vu, Groundhog Day, over and over and over? And the same person I was last year as I'm showing up this year. Yes, we all had experiences this year that were maybe different than previous years. But the question is not only did I have unique experiences this year. You know, this year we went to visit, you know, Portugal or Greece, or we went to the outbacks of Australia. But that's experiences. That doesn't mean I've changed. Am I a better version of myself? Not only did I have different experiences, which are nice, but am I a 2025 model? Am I a refined, better expression of the person God created me to be? That's what the year calls upon. That's what this time of the year calls upon. And one of the greatest ways to do it is forgiveness. One of the greatest ways to do it is to to fix our stuff between us and our fellow man. Obviously, also the stuff between us and Hashem, us and a God. But sometimes I feel like for many of us, that's the easier part. Sometimes becoming kosher is actually easier than forgiving a brother you haven't spoken to in 12 years. Kosher is awesome. Of course, kosher is awesome, as if they need me to say that. But equally as awesome, and in some ways even more awesome, is Bein Adam L'Chavera, the stuff between us and our, the people around us. It's very nice to scream religious piety. But am I a good person? Am I a decent person? Am I a person of my word? Am I a person of kindness? Am I charitable? Am I reliable? Am I gracious? These are the questions this time of the year. So I wish you all, wish myself and all of us, Shana Tova, a good year. May we be inscribed in the book of good life. May we only have a year of incredible growth, incredible miracles. And the greatest miracle of all is when we discover that we are so much greater than the petty selves we thought we were. Wishing you and yours a Shana Tovah.